Spring into deals at Lowe's. Shop select 1.5-gallon annuals hanging baskets, 2 for $15, for the perfect addition to Mom's garden. Plus, get 3 free bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil when you buy 3. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/6, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
I have hugged Daisy a lot this week.
Oh, I'm sure you have. Between I'll Be Gone in the Dark and this, come on. I'm surprised she's not here.
Every time I walk into her room now, she just goes, "Daddy, I know you love me."
I know, God. She's like all of us, all the listeners. Girl, we know you love your kid.
Welcome to part 2 of this thing.
Oh, thank you so much. Back at ya. Thrilled to be nominated.
Just a reminder, if you want more Jillian and me, if you want more fun laughs, good times, join us on the Patreon, you guys. Over 150 full bonus episodes to download and binge right this second. We just finished All Begun in the Dark, Fear City. You know what's on there.
Yeah, Fear City's up next. We're doing The Vow after that. But how about things we've actually done?
Yeah.
Tiger King, Don't F with Cats, McMillions, The Jinx, Madeline McCann, and then just a bunch of fun like after parties. Sometimes we send you stuff in the mail every once in a while.
Yeah.
We do Zoom hangs. It's just a whole thing.
There's ad-free versions of these episodes. If you want to check it out, go to patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed or go to our website, click on the Patreon link. Girl, should I tell them about the merch this week?
I think so. Yeah, because I feel like it's just like same old, same old.
Yeah.
I feel we got to switch it up or else they're not going to listen.
Totally. All right, you guys, look, we've got tons of merch. We've got like t-shirts, mugs. It's all the sayings and all the buzzy, fun words. I'm not good at doing the merch, girl. You're way better at it than me.
It's a lot of pressure because it's a little self-congratulatory. Yeah. Saying like all the stuff, all the stupid shit we say that you wanted on a mug.
The point is we're donating every penny of it goes to charity. So all of the proceeds go to amazing charities. This really is hard, girl. I put you on the spot with it every week.
Every week. Like, it's easy. Like, I can just, like...
We have a Let the Women Do the Work pillow at the office. Every now and then I take a little nap and I put my head on
I've never seen it.
I know. Isn't that insane?
Tell her I said hi.
I will.
Give her a hug for me.
Girl, what are we talking about this week?
We're wrapping up our coverage
yes.
of the 3-part ID coverage on the Atlanta child murders.
Yeah, it's not a comedy, you guys. It's not.
That's my bit, but I'll let you have it. It's not a comedy.
From 1979 to 1981, the city of Atlanta dealt with the unthinkable.
All the children are between 8 and 15 years of age.
The bodies of black children keep turning up in the woods.
And I walked over and it was a human skull.
And the rivers.
This latest death is apparently connected to the others.
More than 2 dozen victims.
The person who did this was a psychopath and a monster.
I was holding on to her body, saying, "What did they do to you?"
Families are devastated.
The one person you had, he's gone. And you didn't get to say goodbye.
And long simmering tensions reach the boiling point.
Atlanta was on the borderline of exploding.
It has to be the police. Who else could pull this kind of stuff off?
It could possibly be the Ku Klux Klan killing these black kids.
It was like, okay, they're trying to start a race war.
At the root of it all is racism.
Everybody was a suspect.
Until one big break changes everything.
That's a body hitting the water.
I said, "Do you know why we've stopped you?" "Yeah, it's about the murder of those children, isn't it?"
40 years later, parents and family members still have questions. Was justice ever truly served?
When you look back over the story, hell no.
Their case never was that well investigated, and there's possibly still a murderer out there.
But one day, you know, we might find out what happened.
So this opens in a really bananas way. So if you guys remember the way that if you haven't listened to episode 1, go listen to that, then come back to this. Unless you like listening to things out of order, I'm not trying to tell you what to do, I guess.
I'm telling you to listen in order.
Okay.
Be- because we cut off their episode two.
Yes.
In our episode one. So these are our rules now. Right. This is not like, because it's three episodes that we're breaking into two. So like you're on our turf.
We're
now.
Doing
our
it
shit.
Our way. So the point yes. is, the last episode ended with them with like the cops under the bridge hearing a body being dumped, and they pull over this creep on the side of the road, and they ask him if he knows why they pulled him over, and he's like, yeah, it's about all those kids I killed, basically, is what
yes,
he says.
Essentially, yes.
What he really said was, it's about all those murdered kids, right? So he's not like straight up admitting to the murders.
But you should, the answer is, no, officer, I have no idea. Not like, figured you'd come a-knockin' because of all those missing kids.
On Obsessed with Disappeared, Ellen was telling a story about a time a cop pulled her over, and he's like, do you know why I pulled you over? And she goes, because I was on my phone. And he goes, actually, no, but good to
know. No, but thanks.
Don't answer the question. Just say no, officer. How may I help you?
Oh, God. Even that doesn't work half the time. So who the hell knows? So the driver's name is Wayne Bertram Williams. They call him Wayne and they call him Williams.
Yes,
so
that's right. That's so good luck to you.
We'll call him the murderer.
Yeah. And so they say to him, like, you know, they ask for permission to search his car and he gives consent.
And I remember in the front seat, there was a pair of like suede gloves with a wool liner and a flashlight. No biggie.
They see like a pair of gloves and a flashlight, which they don't find too suspicious.
Wait.
What?
They find suede gloves with wool lining. We also just went through 15 minutes of how humid and like
yes.
shitty Atlanta.
Yes.
Not, I'm just saying their words. They're
yeah.
saying, the point is, because they were sitting by this river, like waiting for him to dump a body. God, I hate that phrase. We've got to get a new phrase. Like that, it makes me sound like a monster, but like for him to do the horribleness that he does. But
I
like,
feel like I really just heard that for the first time. Was
it's
like,
horrible,
you,
right? It's the worst.
It's really
it's
bad.
How they describe it, and it's like these people who really care about the children and the people,
yes.
but like there's got to be a better way. But anyway, in the last episode, when they're describing like how they had to like basically just watch this humid swamp
yeah.
in Atlanta, they're like, oh my God, it's so hot. It's
yeah.
so humid.
Yeah.
It's so uncomfortable. And especially in the middle of the night, it's even worse. It's very muggy. So when I hear suede gloves with wool lining
uh-huh.
in the Atlanta humidity, I'm like, what the fuck? Why are you wearing gloves in Atlanta anyway? But I'm saying FBI Mike saying like no biggie to suede gloves and wool lining. It's a biggie.
Yeah, totally. And then this guy, Mike, one of the agents, Mike, is like questioning him.
FBI Mike was like, honestly, I thought he'd be a little more intimidated by me. I'm FBI Mike.
I remember talking to him and he didn't seem to be intimidated as I might be. He was just as calm as he could be.
So the cop was like, what are you doing driving around at like 3 a.m.? What's going on? And he says,
again, yeah, 2:55 in the morning.
The story of this guy, Wayne Williams or whatever the fuck, is that he's a talent scout. He's got a meeting with a woman named Cheryl Johnson in the morning.
At 9 in the morning, he has this meeting.
Yeah.
They lived in Spanish Trace apartments and that he was out trying to find their address so that he wouldn't be late for the appointment in the morning.
Now, I gotta tell you, girl, this is something I would totally do. I am not a murderer, but I would do the drive-by, probably not at 3 a.m., but you never know.
Of course you would do the drive-by, but not at 3 in the morning, 6 hours before the meeting and
right.
this appointment.
Totally.
You would do it 2 days before,
yeah.
and Steve on the spreadsheet would be like, actually, I'd feel more comfortable if you did it 9 days before or whatever. But like, he was out at 3 a.m. trying to find an address so that he wouldn't be late for the appointment in 6 hours.
Yeah.
That is a lie. No matter which way you slice it, it's a lie.
And
for whatever reason, FBI Mike and company are like, we let him go.
So they let him go that night. The authorities don't arrest him. They just question him because really nobody's sort of seen him do anything. And they don't have any evidence of anything other than that they heard that splash.
A lot of people have questioned why he did that. But to not let him go would have been placing him under arrest. And I didn't think we had enough at that time. And to this day, I still don't.
And you could tell that FBI Mike has been getting shit about this his whole life because he's like, I stood by it then, I stand by it now.
So 2 days after the stop on the bridge, a body appears very close to where they stopped Wayne Williams.
And downriver. So there's no other way to say it. Like the body floated in the right direction.
The body found on May 24th, 1981. Is quickly identified as Nathaniel Cater. At 27 years old, Cater is no child, but like many of the most recent victims, he'd been asphyxiated and dumped in the river.
Friends, I'm saying it. Wayne Williams killed the kids.
Yes, totally. Yes, yes. When we get to the end of this, I have some thoughts on it as well.
We're not at the end though.
No.
Right? Yeah. Today, this minute, Wayne Williams is responsible.
Yes.
For the people who show up in this area on the bridge.
Right. So like if you're doing the math, they hear this guy dump a body, they pull him over, and then he drives away, and 2 days later, a body is found right where he dumped it.
Right. So now all eyes are on Wayne Williams, and they put him under surveillance, and he knew, the FBI knew. It was a very, I don't know if it's FBI Mike or FBI Jim, but they're like, oh, he knew we were there. It wasn't a covert operation. It was extremely overt.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, is that the clinical definition of it?
We wanted him to know that he was under constant surveillance. If he's likely to be the person responsible for these homicides, we certainly don't want him to commit another one.
What the FBI is saying is that, like, we know this guy's the killer, but we don't have enough evidence to bring him in yet. What we can't have happen is know that he's the killer and let him kill somebody else on our watch. So they're like, they literally say they're like staked out in front of his house with a big van that says like FBI is watching you, Wayne Williams.
We are watching you. Yes. This is in Mindhunter, truly. Like,
oh,
Jonathan
really?
Groff is like drinking coffee and eating like a bagel outside, just like, hey Wayne, hey, how's it going?
Girl, your hand is coming in to the Zoom square in the creepiest way. It looked like another person. It looked like somebody was gonna grab your face. It was so scary. In the horror movie version of this, what would happen is I would see the killer slowly walking towards you, but my audio would cut out, so I wouldn't be able to, like, I'd be screaming it at you, but you wouldn't hear me.
Or I'd be like, funny bit, girl. I know we talked about it. Anyway.
While the FBI keeps the Williams family home under close watch, investigators delve into Wayne's background.
So we learn about Wayne Williams and his family. And here's the thing. Remember John Douglas, Mindhunter guy, FBI profiler?
Yeah.
Remember we learned, like, there are a couple things that the FBI was like, here's what you should look out for with the murderer of these kids.
Totally.
He's a single black male. He's an only child. Probably lives with his parents.
Yeah.
In his 20s. Highly educated. You guys, Wayne Williams ticks every last box.
Yeah.
He lives with his parents. He and then we realize that he like has this obsession with like the fire department and the police department.
I know. They call him like they have a word for him, but like he's this weird guy who like makes money.
Oh, it's not a weird word. It's a groupie. They call him a groupie.
Yes, yes.
So he would be this like police, like law enforcement, police and fire groupie, right? Like he would try to get there before the TV station did. But also, this guy had an old police car. He put the lights back on it. He had a scanner in there. Like, he thought he was, like, part of the gang. And I'm thinking, this is the guy.
I know.
It's exactly what they described.
I know. It's so fucking creepy.
Oh, and also, he is trying to break into the music industry and really try to be, like, a manager.
He was a producer. He was out in a lot of the different scenes.
His goal was to try to find the next Jackson 5, and that he was looking for youngsters to audition and take to the studio so that he could form this group.
He has a shortwave radio station for a period of time and would be trying to attract young musical talent.
And we see a flyer, and
yeah.
It's like, all interviews private and free. Like, that's a big selling point. And then all I'm thinking about is Patman, who wanted to get into the music industry.
Exactly.
He probably had this, like, exclusive and free meeting. I can't get over this.
I know.
All interviews private and free.
I know. So it's June 3rd, 1980. They bring this Wayne Williams guy in for questioning. And at the same time, they're at his house, like, searching the house and the vehicles. You guys, our girlfriend Larry, the one who's, like, the fiber expert, he's back.
Fiber expert Larry Peterson is called to the scene. He analyzed thousands of fibers collected from victims of the killings with a focus on three varieties that kept reappearing. A rare green trilobal fiber, a violet acetate fiber, and a German Shepherd dog hair.
And he says as soon as he walked into the house, he sees it all.
When I arrived at the house, it was already dark. It was a medium-sized house in what appeared to be a middle-class neighborhood. Went in through the carport entrance. As soon as I walked into the bedroom, I saw there was wall-to-wall green carpet. They have a German Shepherd, and here's a bedspread in the suspect's bedroom that has a violet acetate.
green carpet. Yep. Wall to wall, baby.
Yeah.
German Shepherd hairs. Yes. I'm like, bingo. They have a German Shepherd that they better have been nice to. God,
I know.
Damn it.
I know.
And then this like violet acetate fiber. Don't 100% know what that is, but it's on the bedspread and like kaboom, like all yeah. three, like here we go.
I just can only imagine when you're Larry and you've been staring at these fibers under a microscope for 2 years and you walk into the house and you see them, like the hair on the back of his neck must have just exploded.
Yeah. And Larry collects exactly what he needs. So while Wayne Williams is being questioned, Larry is like getting, like ticking everything off his list, saying, got this, got this, got this.
Yep.
And he gets back to the lab, gets back to work, and they are instant matches, like faster than anything's ever been matched ever.
I know.
And it was instantaneous. Like,
after 9 months of searching, Peterson is convinced he's found a single source for all three. Wayne Williams' house.
Holy cow. There it is.
And that's how the ID episode 2 ends, where Larry's like, we got a match! No questions asked! We fucking got it! It's the gay bar party I wanted, a gay Saturday night party I wanted on the bridge.
Totally.
When they got the guy, Larry's like, Jillian, girl, I got you. Let's go.
Oh my God.
He's playing like the entire like early Madonna catalog. We're getting like Burning Up. We're getting Lucky Star. Oh, we're getting all of it.
We're getting Lucky Star. All right, so now we're at episode 3 of the ID coverage. It's called Requiem. And basically, like, the whole opening is just, like, is reiterating the fact that, like, the fibers that Larry found in the house are now, like, connecting all the victims.
As Wayne Williams is being questioned.
Yeah.
Like, simultaneously, like, Wayne Williams is being questioned, and Larry is just like, you guys, we got him.
But so this is my big question, girl, because, like, the house where the fibers all are, obviously the bodies were in the house. He lives there with his parents. We see the house today. It is a small, tiny house. Those parents had to know something.
Oh, I mean, yes, I think they absolutely did. There is, I think, a chance, again, not an expert on any of this, that he could have been carrying those fibers, but I think it's more likely that these, oh God, these kids were in his room. His room on the carpet, in his room on the bedspread. Like, I think that's what we're dealing with here, and it just gets worse and worse and worse.
It's so, like, Dahmer-ish. Remember Dahmer was, like, in the basement doing all that shit to the bodies, and the parents were like, it really stinks down there, but we're just gonna ask no questions.
His stupid grandmother who was like, oh, just pray the gay away. Fuck that. And so we don't meet Wayne Williams' parents. Like, they seem pretty shitty.
Yeah.
Like, as far as I'm concerned.
Totally.
Like, and, like, just be nice to the dog, goddammit. And I'm sure the dog was mad. I'm sure the dog was upset about the horrible things
that
are happening. German Shepherds especially, they are so smart and so protective. You know that dog was like, Wayne?
I know. Well, so they bring Wayne in for a polygraph, right?
Oh, God.
And we all know that polygraphs are bullshit, whatever. We meet the guy who administered the polygraph test.
Richard.
And so Richard is telling us, he, like, straps him in, like, Wayne willingly takes the polygraph test, and he's asking him questions, and this guy, the way that this whole scene is explained is so casual.
I ask him direct questions. Did you cause the death of Nathaniel Cater? No. Did you throw his body into the river that night? No. I saw the reactions occurring, so I ran a chart. And I said, well, I'll be darned. You're the guy we're looking for.
He's like, oh my God, girl, you're totally the murderer. It's basically what he says to him.
The point is, Wayne Williams failed the lie detector test. He said no to everything. But, you know, as Special Agent John Glover, and I will tell you, that means nothing.
No, but I did want to know that there was another person in the room. Because this guy, according to the polygraph examiner, he's legitimately accusing this guy of being a murderer. And I was like, are you just, like, looking a murderer in the face and calling him a murderer, and you guys are the only two people there? That's terrifying.
Isn't that what a polygraph is, though? Like, did you or did you not kill this person?
Yeah. It is, but I just want to know that there's, like, armed guards in the room. Like, what's keeping this guy from killing the polygraph guy?
The fact that he wants to pass the polygraph test.
I guess that's true. I guess if you kill the polygraph examiner, it's kind of like admitting to being a murderer.
Not a good look, girl. No. Like, just not.
Yeah, I really didn't think that through. Thank you for clearing that up.
Lie detector tests are bullshit. I will say this, as will Agent John Glover, who we also love. He's like, here's why they mean nothing.
First of all, polygraphs aren't admitted in court. Secondly, they're not reliable after you've been intensely interviewing a person. All you're doing is measuring the stress that's already there.
But the other thing, too, is that, like, Wayne Williams fails the polygraph test, and we get this, like, story from the FBI guys who are like, he was just walking around the office.
He's walking around the office, you know, saying, you guys don't have anything on me. If you did, we wouldn't be talking. I'd be in handcuffs. It just kind of confirmed that this guy is, you know, a different kind of personality.
And they let him go. They let him go.
But we couldn't charge him with anything because there was no federal law violated. The DA, nope, didn't have enough evidence. So we had to let him walk.
But at the same time, John Glover's like, the more he kept talking, the more we knew he was the guy.
Totally. But like, Wayne Williams is not named a person of interest, right? Not at all. Rather than just like going home and being like, oh my God, I got away with it. You guys, he calls a press conference. He like calls a press conference like on his front lawn.
Right. But here, no. So this is weird on 800 levels,
yeah.
But it's the thing is he was never officially named a suspect. So because of that, he can't be shown on camera.
And so the television cameras didn't show him. They showed the reporters' faces on camera, you know, interviewing this disembodied voice.
All we see for the visual of it is the reporters being like, uh-huh, ooh, yeah. Like them leaning in and paying attention and taking notes and reacting to him.
They openly said, you killed Nathaniel Cater and you know it and you're lying to us.
And it's like the reporters are trying to not look boring. On the footage of them, and they're like, uh-huh, he said what? And they, like, have their little pencil and notepad, and it just, everyone, like, even our talking heads are laughing about it.
He passes out his resume, which claims he flew F-15 fighter jets and was a race car driver and just incredible stuff, all of which is fabrication.
It's bananas.
I know. So now, you guys, we meet Diamond Lee. And we'll get back to her role in this in a minute. She's like a TV producer, but she's also a talking head of the documentary. And she is saying that this Williams guy said, you guys, it couldn't be me. I couldn't be the murderer.
You guys know it's not me, because if it were me, folks would have seen me. Everybody in the community knows me. Everybody knows who Wayne is.
Everybody knows me. Everybody would recognize me. And the FBI, they're like another talking head, just basically cuts her off and is like, no, that's the point.
He blended in perfectly. And why did he blend in perfectly? Because he lives in that community.
He blended in perfectly in this society because everybody knew him. The politicians knew him. The police knew him. They tell this story about like a police roadblock where they're literally looking for the killer and they're stopping every car and like looking in the cars. But they wave this Wayne Williams guy through. Because the cops know him.
Yeah, and when the FBI was like, girl, why'd you do that? And they were like, oh, because it was just Wayne.
Right, exactly.
It's no big deal. Everybody knows him. And I'm like, oh, God. So again, the profilers were exactly right.
So they're looking at the fibers and they're saying that like they want to charge this guy, but the DA is nervous because he doesn't want to hang the whole case on the fibers because it's not an exact science yet. You guys, guess what's happening in Atlanta that week?
It just happened that there was a gathering of fiber experts in Atlanta. Some of the best fiber experts in North America.
There's like this slew of scientists. They're like professional fiber studying people. Like their job is to be great at the fiber. They're excellent at it.
There's like a fiber scientist convention in Atlanta.
They have theme music. They have a slow walk. They're living their best lives.
They take the fibers over to this convention. You know, they got to go to like the Hilton downtown or whatever.
Oh my God.
And they bring the fiber stuff and all the fiber experts look at it and they're like, no, this evidence is rock solid.
And they looked at some of the fibers and said, this is unbelievable. These are extremely significant fibers.
And they're like, just to bring it home, this is our lives.
Yeah, we love fiber.
Like, we dream of seeing a match this good.
Totally.
This is the guy. Like, this totally. Is it. This is what we've wanted.
All these scientists told me that it is highly, highly, not only unlikely, but improbable for all of these to come together in one place.
So they arrest Wayne Williams on Father's Day, 1981.
Yeah,
finally.
And when his image is shown on TV, we're back to Isaac. Remember, Isaac was the kid whose brother was that Pac-Man guy, and he's the one that had that story about like going to the candy lady, Miss Willie Mae, and that creeper followed him up the stairs. So Isaac sees this guy. What's this guy's name?
Wayne Williams.
He sees Wayne Williams and Willie Mae. That's a lot. It's a lot for my brain.
Miss Willie Mae is very hard to say.
Yeah, it's true. It's
like when we're like so amped and saying it so fast, Miss Willie Mae. I want them all to be. It's weird.
I know. So
the M's and W's want to switch.
The mouth wants what the mouth wants.
Yeah.
That was the weirdest thing I've ever said.
That was.
It's been a long day, girl. So the guy Isaac sees Wayne Williams like doing his perp walk or whatever, and he's like, "Girl, that's the guy I saw."
The guy who they showed on TV, who they had just arrested, was the same guy who was in Thomasville Heights apartments that night. The same guy who stared me and Miss Willie Mae down. That was him. I think he was still wearing the same outfit, I think. Same messy afro, same glasses, same stupid smug look on his face.
He's still wearing that same tweed coat.
Right. And he's like, yeah, his hair still looks like shit. Like, that's the guy.
Yeah.
That is totally the guy. So by July 22nd, 1981, Judge Clarence Cooper is selected at random to preside over the trial.
Yeah. So we're like, we're getting to the trial. Like, that's the whole next part of this.
Yeah, because obviously.
Right, yeah.
Did you hear about the fibers? Do I have to scream it?
Well, I wouldn't have heard about it, but then all of that shit went down at the Fiber Convention in Atlanta, and when the news gets out, it gets out.
I love those people. Those are like truly my people, where they're like, oh my God.
Fiber!
We never thought we'd see a connection like this. We never thought we'd see a match so big, so great. So the trial starts, and we get like, the jury is 8 black people, 4 white people, which they really want us to know about, which I do think is important.
I was so glad that the jury looked like the defendant. I liked it.
Right. So there's a problem here, though. So everyone has been screaming, rightfully so, about the children for 2 years.
Yes, yeah.
But the thing is, Wayne Williams is on trial for the murder of the 2 adults who he killed.
Jimmy Ray Payne and Nathaniel Cater. Both were found under the bridge where Wayne was stopped and are tied to him with strong fiber evidence. But both of them are adults.
This is supposedly the Atlanta child killer, but now we got this guy who they say killed these 2 adults, and we don't see him being charged with the murder of any child.
So remember, there had been that curfew for children implemented in Atlanta, which is why he couldn't get kids anymore, and he had started killing adults now instead.
Right. They deserve justice, too.
Yeah.
But the issue is, like, how are you supposed to convince a jury that the child murders and the 2, quote, adult murders are related?
Especially because, like, he's not charged with any of the murders of the kids, but they want to be able to, like, use that evidence in court. And basically, the judge is like, okay, girl, go for it. Like, he just says, like, there's enough evidence connecting them. You don't have to charge him with those murders to be able to talk about them in court.
It's called the prior bad acts doctrine, and I'm like, that sounds like a nickname we'd give something. Like, those prior bad acts he did. Those other shitty things he did. Can't we throw that in there, too?
Totally.
Judge, great. And the judge is like, girl, yes.
With Judge Cooper allowing evidence from 10 additional murders, the state deals a major blow to Wayne's defense, putting him on trial for crimes that he was never charged with.
So what the state needs to do here is connect the fibers to the bodies. The fibers are the linchpin here. And I know we're all excited about the fibers and that convention was epic. But this is going to be a major problem for the pizzazz factor, girl.
Right, right.
And so they start to show us the charts and the graphs that the prosecution is using, and it can only be described as pizzazzless.
We had charts, you know, showing all the different colors fiber can be. And how there are all these variations, meaning fibers can be identifiable, particularly if a fiber is rare.
It's the 1981 version of a PowerPoint.
Exactly.
It's the worst.
Connecting all the different fibers and all the different kinds of fibers.
Here's, for example, a view of Wayne Williams' bedroom showing the green carpet. And here's what green carpet's fibers look like under a microscope, and here's what individual fibers from these sources would look like if we were to find them in the victim at the scene.
I just have in huge letters, no, they're in the weeds on the fibers. We need the pizzazz.
And the thing is, just like, I'm sitting here, I know hindsight's 2020, but I'm like, just explain it to the jury the way you told us.
Exactly.
Because I totally understand it. And I think it's super interesting and super damning. So I know that like back in 1981, things were different. They weren't talking to ID about it. They weren't talking to us. But I'm like, if you just show up, like the footage that we saw a bunch of science-y shit. We saw like the actual fibers blown up and they all looked exactly the same. You know,
I
like
did get bored during that part. I was like, you guys, this is the ID. This is not enough pizzazz factor. I'm bored.
But the thing is, it's all visual.
Yeah.
Like, it's so clear when you see, like, here are the fibers from the dead kid. Here are the fibers from his bedroom. They look exactly the same. It's all visual. Like,
I know.
Just show them the pictures. And honestly, like, it's not that hard to understand if you just show, here's something on the victim and here's something in his house. I don't need to hear about it.
And
just
don't drag
it
out
me.
For like 2 weeks, which is what they did. And then the defense attorney, her name is Mary Welcome, and she's on the I really like her. She's on the steps of the courthouse after opening arguments, and she goes,
I hope like hell that they have more than fibers. I hope like hell that they do.
And I went, you and me both, Mary. You and me both, girl.
Yeah.
So remember, we're talking about the fiber evidence, right? And so far, it is not looking great for Wayne Williams, girl. But then the defense points out,
there are carpet mills in great numbers north of Atlanta. And so it's not uncommon for there to be carpet fibers in the Chattahoochee River.
If you're telling me that you pull bodies out of the river that have carpet fibers on them, girl, that makes sense.
I know, but I see that and I raise you the following.
Yes.
That the prosecution is bringing in a bunch of character witnesses.
Oh my God. This was like Menendez all over again, you guys. They parade in dozens of character witnesses against this guy.
This witness, Robert Lee Toland, claimed that Williams despised, quote, lower class blacks and had once proposed how by eliminating young black males, one could wipe out whole future generations.
We are told that it's this witness, Robert Lee Toland, who said that in court. And I was like, fine, like, maybe that's true. Can we get a little context? How do they know each other? When was this said? Like, what kind of friends are they? Like, that's a very damning statement. And I wanted to know a little bit more about the guy who said it. That's all. Am I asking for the world?
Am I reaching for the stars here? The point is, they're saying like, oh, well, here's the thing. We have all of these witnesses saying that Wayne Williams was like blaming all of these young black kids for his own failures in the music industry and like just being a nightmare of a person. Like, it was everyone's fault and not his.
In Wayne's case, he felt like other people were making him a failure in life, and that was poor black kids who were out on the street at night.
According to the testimony, he had expressed contempt for some of these kids. One of the witnesses talked about him bragging sort of offhandedly how he knew how to kill a kid with just a touch of his hands.
He felt like poor young black kids were keeping him down and making him a failure. And so he was out to kill them all, is what it seems
like. Which makes zero sense.
Yeah.
And also, remember when he was crossing the bridge at 3 a.m. to find the address of this person?
Cheryl Johnson.
There's a really excellent chance that she does not exist at all.
Right. Yeah. Which
and
is
like, is anyone surprised by that? That he was lying through his teeth?
No.
Is anyone shocked that there's like a 98% chance that Cheryl Johnson does not exist?
No, it's just like, it's chilling to remember though, like how he was telling that story to the cop. The cop was like, this guy was not scared. He wasn't intimidated at all. Like, he was just making that. He had literally dumped a body 30 seconds ago. He had a dead body in his car up until 30 seconds ago, and he is cool as a cucumber. Oh my God.
Well, to that point, the FBI is like, here's the thing. So serial killers can stay cool in the short term, coolest of cucumbers, but not in the long run.
Right.
So Wayne Williams decides to take the stand. His defense is like, we can't stop this guy, whatever.
Wayne is going to take the stand. You know, it was electrifying.
First day of Wayne's testimony, everybody wanted to be there and see what he said. So it was very dramatic when he took the stand. He was great. Smooth, cocky. He sounded like a person who can convince you that the sun rises in the west. He was loving it the first day.
And so his first day on the stand goes really well. They say it was a big win for him. And so their plan for day two is to like get him riled up on the stand, to like bring out the serial killer in him.
Right. And so the deal is, the prosecution's like, we're just going to keep him on the stand for as long as possible. And we're really going to bait him. And we're going to get all in his face. And we're going to ask him all these questions. And we're going to be a little accusatory and just kind of break him.
What we did was go through all the same questions we had asked the day before.
We knew he could not answer them without getting all crossed up. His answers would conflict with each other.
Mallard is really crowding Wayne's space. He said, how did it feel when you were choking the life out of those kids?
They're just rattling him, and it's getting like worse and worse.
Wayne bristled. He's mad. And he comes up to the edge of his seat, and he points at Mallard. And Wayne says, I didn't kill anybody.
Everyone in the courtroom is on the edge of their seat, like I am on the edge of this article couch, not an ad. So everyone's leaning forward, and like Wayne Williams starts to take the bait. And so he throws a fit.
And he said, I'm not answering any more of these questions. You can't make me, you know, and you keep asking the same questions over and over again. You know, he was very animated, very agitated.
You were kind of taken aback because it was so sharp.
That's when he said, you want the real Wayne Williams? You got him. He blew up.
Wayne literally frightened the courtroom.
And this is when it cuts back to one of the sketches of the jury, and there's literally pearl clutching happening.
Pearl clutching, totally. And so the jury's like, okay. So they saw his true colors in that moment. That's the whole thing, that like this guy can really turn on a dime, and suddenly he's like leaping out of the chair on the stand, screaming like the real Wayne Williams. Like that was his words.
Right.
It's like, and it was so like, there's a whole other side of you. There's a whole other violent, aggressive side of you. Cool.
Right. Because prior to this, it had seemed like the jury was totally on his side. Like they just, there was no way this guy could be the monster that they're describing. And then he shows his colors. And so on February 26, 1982, it takes 11 hours of deliberation, and the jury comes back in, and he's found guilty of both of the two murders that he was charged with.
But the community and the FBI are like, but isn't there 30 murders? Aren't there 30 murders we should be talking about?
Wayne Williams is convicted of killing Nathaniel Cater and Jimmy Ray Payne. But the police task force list includes another 28 victims, most of them children. During the trial, prosecutors use fiber evidence to connect Williams with 10 of these murders. Shortly after the trial, Commissioner Lee Brown closes those 10 cases and 12 others without ever seeking convictions, attributing 22 more murders to Wayne Williams. 5 cases are handed back to the jurisdictions where the victims were found, and one child is still missing.
And so what we learn in this documentary, whether it's true or not, is that the FBI says that they only were able to convict on these two murders because they only had the evidence to convict on these two murders. Maybe it's true, I don't know, but the rest of the families of the actual children who were killed are left thinking that the FBI and the cops and whoever is investigating just doesn't care about their kids.
Well, and I also think the families would accept this outcome, the fact that he's going to be in prison for the rest of his life. I think they would have accepted that more if they felt like people and law enforcement specifically gave a shit about their kids
totally,
all this time.
Totally.
Like, you know, like, and some of our friends here did, they totally did, but like the commissioner didn't, the mayor didn't. And so like these families don't know the inner workings of the FBI. And now they're, you know, again, we're only hearing about this now on ID. So all they knew was that all they remember is on the 6 o'clock news, the mayor saying there's no connection. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I feel like if they felt like they cared about the kids, they'd say, well, at least he's behind bars and it doesn't matter how he got there. But that wasn't communicated.
We start to hear too from the FBI that like, even though we attribute all those murders to him, we know that he didn't do them all.
If you look at the list, Wayne Williams clearly did not kill everyone on that list.
I don't think anyone in the FBI has ever said, to my knowledge, that he killed all of those children. I don't believe it, because I know of several that I know he didn't.
Everyone in law enforcement knows that he had nothing to do with the two girls.
He says everyone in law enforcement knows he didn't kill those two little girls, Angel and LaTanya, but like those deaths are attributed to him. So who did? Like, why aren't you investigating? If you know that he didn't do that, why aren't those deaths being investigated?
It's shitty.
So, okay, you guys, I think this is going to be the point where we're going to have to ask you to pull over.
This is, I'm like rubbing my face and my temples. Okay.
So this Wayne Williams guy is in prison. 16 years, his case goes nowhere. In 2003, he decides he's going to, like, on his own, mount, like, a PR campaign for himself and try to get, like, the public on his side. So he's writing letters to this radio show host, Frank Ski, in Atlanta. And so this guy, Frank, is, like, reading his letters and, like, falling under his spell.
Because Frank was a kid in Atlanta when this whole thing was happening. So he feels a very personal connection to this.
You're a kid growing up when all of this is happening, and then the guy who gets accused of killing kids is now writing you.
So Frank calls Diamond Lewis, who we talked about a little bit earlier. She's like a TV producer.
I got a call from Frank Ski late at night one night, and he said, Diamond, I've got an exclusive. We're going to go and interview Wayne Williams.
And he was like, girl, let's go see this Wayne Williams guy in jail and at least see, like, what he has to say. And so they decide to go in 2005, and we see pieces of this interview.
None of us have really had closure in this thing. Not the families, not Wayne, and not the people of Atlanta.
Absolutely.
I just want to say this from the heart. Wayne Williams, me, I have never hurt, I have never killed anybody in my life.
The thing is, like, he is maintaining his full innocence. So he's saying he didn't kill the two adults. He's maintaining 100% I'm being railroaded. I didn't kill a single person.
Yeah.
And I think that that's just not true.
No.
I don't think he killed all of the people attributed to him.
Yeah.
But he definitely killed at least these two people.
Girl, he also refers to himself in the third person. I was wondering how you took that.
I feel horrible about it. I just, as if I couldn't hate this person enough.
I know. And like, and he's like, I mean, this guy's a murderer. He killed all of these kids. And so Diamond says to us,
Frank and I walked out of that facility. We looked at each other and we knew at that moment that we were thinking the exact same thing. Oh my gosh, I think this guy is really innocent.
To which I said, oh my God, Diamond, I think you guys are garbage.
Right, because then Frank uses his, like, morning zoo radio show or whatever to become, like, the pro-Wayne Williams platform. And our friend Isaac, whose brother was murdered.
His brother is Patman.
Patman with the candy store.
Yeah.
And like, basically calls up the show at, like, 9 o'clock in the morning and is like, are you guys fucking serious?
And so I call the radio station. I said, this guy who y'all are propping up now, not only did this guy kill my brother, he actually came back to our apartment to try to get me. Don't give this guy a platform.
And the thing is, like, again, he didn't kill all of the people that he's attributed to. Like, the two girls, specifically, they didn't fit the profile.
Yeah.
Definitely. And, like, that is true. But to suddenly be like, I don't think he killed any of them. Like, that is bullshit, and that's garbage.
It's bullshit. Like, and Isaac is saying you could see, like, the sentiment turning.
And you could actually see the public support for him start to pick up. Because if you tell a lie long enough, it becomes the truth to some people.
Then we learn about this Lewis Graham, right? He's the chief of police now in 2005.
Right.
He was one of the original investigators on the case back in the day. So he's got a personal connection to it. And he decides, you know what? He's going to reopen five of the cases that were attributed to Wayne Williams, but, like, he was never really prosecuted for.
Which is great. On paper, it sounds great.
Less than a year later, Chief Lewis Graham resigns amid separate accusations of police wrongdoing. His investigation had failed to turn up any new evidence, and the five cases are closed.
And then the final nail in the coffin, they win a thing in court to get a hair tested that was found on one of the bodies, like a DNA test for the first time.
Right.
And Diamond, who is now like a Wayne Williams apologist / supporter, is looking at us and saying,
and the DNA test came back and said that 98% of the population could be excluded. 2% could not. And Wayne Williams was in that 2%.
You guys, he killed that kid, at least.
And Diamond says it to us like, so to prove my point,
right,
of the 2% of the population, and I'm like, no, that proves our point.
Yeah.
He cannot be excluded. What are you saying?
Right. And like, Diamond, if your point is he definitely killed some of them, but he didn't kill all of them, that's a fine point and get justice for those kids and those families. But that doesn't sound like what you're saying.
That's my point, girl. My point is that he, like, let's get justice for the people he killed and then get justice for the people he didn't kill by finding the people who murdered them. Diamond is saying he's 100% innocent. He's been railroaded. How dare we? And to Diamond, I say, how dare you?
Right.
And Frank, I say, how dare you?
How does this end. I have, like, that's my last note.
You know, Wayne Williams has been in prison for almost 40 years. He maintains his innocence. In 2019, the Atlanta mayor, Keisha Bottoms, announced that she would retest, like, all the evidence. Nothing has come of it. I side-googed. So it's this kind of, like, really fucked up situation where he, like, Wayne Williams is in prison for a good reason, but justice is not even close to being served in this case.
That really was exhausting, girl.
I felt like, can you hear the breath was like in this case?
Oh, hey, girl.
Oh, hey, what happened?
Sorry
what
for happened? That record scratch. So loud, you guys. Jillian and I are popping in. It's a week since this episode first went up on the Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you guys, we put the episode one out on the regular feed and this episode out on the Patreon a week early. And so we just wanted to say, like, right after episode two went up and people were listening to it, we got a lot of feedback and we wanted to address it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So here we are.
Here we are. So we did the ID coverage of it, and there is an HBO series on it. Now, we are not ignoring the HBO thing. There was a method to this madness, I assure you. So we wanted to be able to cover this story. It was requested so much.
From like day one.
We always joke about, like, we wanted to have it all. We wanted to have it all with this, truly. We wanted to be able to do all of your requests on Patreon, also do this case that is very, very important, and make it available to as many people as we possibly could.
Yeah. And so the choice was either, like, cover the ID series, which is 3 episodes, and put it on the regular feed, or cover the HBO series, which is 5 episodes, and do it on Patreon. So we decided to cover the ID series. And so I think what a lot of people were saying on Facebook is that, like, there was stuff left out of the ID series that was covered in the HBO doc. And so we went back and watched the HBO series, you guys. We found the time in our schedules. It was not easy, girl.
No, but you know what it was? Eye-opening.
Yeah, for sure. And so I think without, like, dragging this on too long, we just wanted to give voice to the people who gave us feedback about the things that got left out of the ID series that we covered. And so for me, the things that really stuck out, a lot of it was in episode 4, which really covers the trial.
Right.
And, you know, for example, Mary Welcome, his lawyer, who is not interviewed in the ID doc, was interviewed here. Remember the big thing, girl, about how they, like, the prosecution broke him and they saw the real Wayne Williams on day 2?
Right. You want the real me? You got him. That whole thing. Yes.
That whole thing. So in the HBO series, Mary Welcome is like, that was me. I told him to do that. Like, girl, you're not showing any emotion. You got to show emotion. And so, you know, she even says, if you want to blame somebody for that, blame me.
Right. So something that really jumped out to me, and it comes, I don't know if it's episode 4 or 5, but there's, like, a lot of very horrible evidence towards the KKK. Like,
yes.
there are trials, there are guys, I mean, the KKK, I mean, they're horrible, horrible terrorists and awful people. But I'm walking away from this thinking, oh shit, so I said some stuff in our second episode of this that does not age well and does not look good.
Because they literally say in the ID coverage, the FBI and the cops are like, people thought some of these murders were done by the KKK. We looked into it, and girl, I swear to God, we investigated it and it wasn't them. So, you know, based on what we covered, we were told it was investigated and it wasn't the KKK.
And then from where I'm sitting, which is a great view of testimony against the KKK. So my mind has changed on that. Absolutely. I don't know if he is 100% innocent, but I stand by what I said in our coverage of it, which is he did not kill everyone that he is charged with.
No, and, like, the big thing that I think people wanted us to know, somebody said that the Black community, by and large, does not believe that Wayne Williams is the Atlanta child monster. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if that means that this person is saying that they believe he didn't kill any of the kids, or he only killed the adults, or he didn't kill the adults. I mean, another takeaway from the HBO doc was that Yusuf Bell's mother, he was one of the kids that was murdered, and mm-hmm. had Wayne Williams wasn't charged with his death, but it was one of the ones that was, quote, pinned on him. Yusuf Bell's mother believes that Wayne Williams didn't kill anybody, that he was literally just a scapegoat. And so that was another major takeaway for me.
Yeah. And, you know, again, what we always say is, like, justice needs to be served. So if, you know, a lot of these cases, all of them need to be reopened and actually investigated. Because the thing is, like, what this always happens, if they just were good at their job from the beginning, we wouldn't be here. If it started out, like, giving a shit about these Black kids to begin with, maybe we wouldn't be here with this conflicting information and different styles of storytelling. And, you know, so justice needs to be served. So if I'm all about reinvestigating and opening things, especially for the kids who, like, the cases who just got lumped into Wayne Williams. Like, that's garbage, and we said as much.
Totally. 1,000,000%. And you guys, we love your feedback. Thank you for educating us on this. We were really glad to hear it. I was glad to watch the HBO series and learn even more. And so I guess that's it, you guys. We love you. We just wanted to sort of give you the addendum and say, we heard you. We went out and, like, looked at what you guys told us to look at, and it was very eye-opening for us.
Yes, absolutely. Also, I'm going to die on this hill. KKK sucks. Not great. Oh, really? I go so far as to say as just the worst.
Yes.
And if you don't agree with that, then this is the wrong podcast for you.
Oh, my God, you guys. We did it. The Atlanta Child Murders, you guys. Oh, my God. We got requests for that for a very long time. I'm glad we covered it. This is one of the ones I really knew nothing about.
Yeah, I'm glad we covered it, too. I think it's one of those things where, like, we just want the case and the story to be told over and over again. Maybe one day full justice will be served. That's really the goal here.
Oh, you guys, if you're looking for some more fun laughs, good times, join us on the page. Over 150 full bonus episodes to download a binge right this second. Every series you've ever wanted us to cover, from HBO, Netflix, Hulu even. I think Lorena was on Hulu, girl.
And beyond, and I feel beyond. Like. And whatever comes down the pike, it's on our list.
Girl, what are we doing next?
We're doing, it's on HBO, it's called Heidi Fleiss, The Would-Be Madam of Crystal. This documentary is so bonkers. It feels like it goes on forever, I gotta tell you. There's just a lot happening. It's a lot of feelings. She's kind of a misogynist. It's kind of nuts.
Oh my God, I can't wait. You guys, you can find us at truecrimeobsessed.com. You got the merch. You got the promo codes for all the ads that we do. You got all of our episodes, the calendar. Girl, they can find you at Jillian with a G and all the things.
They can find you at Patrick Hines on Twitter and Patrick Hines _ on Insta.
You guys, stay tuned for the trailer for Heidi Fleiss, Would-Be Madam of Crystal. Is that what it's called?
The Would-Be Madam of Crystal. And Crystal is a town in Nevada. So okay. It's not just like Crystal, like a state of mind.
Right.
You know? Or some other substance. No. It's like Crystal is like a location.
And then our fun and hilarious outtakes, you guys.
Yeah, TM, TM. And TM means trademark.
Right.
We haven't said that in a while.
That's true. For clarity's sake. All right. We love you guys.
Thanks so much for listening. We love you.
Bye.
I took the oldest profession on earth and did it better than anyone on earth. She slept with all these guys for free, it would be fine. But the fact that she takes money for them, it's illegal. I mean, why should there be laws on a woman's body? I have a substance abuse problem. I love that white trash drug, crystal methane.
Former Hollywood madam Heidi Fleiss wants to get back into the sex business, but this time in Nevada, where it's legal.
It's a man's world, Heidi.
But it's my game to lose.
My biggest fear of Heidi Fleiss is Heidi Fleiss.
Heidi Fleiss is kind of synonymous with sex and money. Really, I'm just your average convicted felon.
Last episode, or this current episode, it's very confusing when we split three episodes into two. But the whole
You're
point
really struggling
is like,
with it. Look, I'm here for you on this journey. I want you to know that I got your back. Jonathan Groff has never had a bagel in his goddamn life.
Eat the bagel, Groff sauce. Like, it's all in the face. You're fine, girl.
I know.
Eat the bagel. Be happy. It's an everything bagel with cream cheese. It's so good.
Oh,
just
God.
Eat it, Groff sauce.
Oh, God.
God.
I'm
You'll be fine.
Starving.
You'll be fine.
Oh, God, please don't make me witness your gruesome murder. I don't think I could handle that.
I mean, I'll try. There's really clearly not much I can do about it.
If we've learned anything.
200 episodes in, 150 eps on Lady Pates. There's clear. I mean, I'll do my goddamn best.
So this guy, Isaac, sees Willie May. What's his name?
Wayne Williams.
I think this might be it. I think this is as far as I'm going to get.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Life with CIDP can be tough, but the Thrive Team, a specialized squad of experts, helps people living with CIDP make more room in their lives for joy. Watch Rare, Well Done.
An all-new reality series, Rare, Well Done,
offers help and hope to people across the country who live with the rare disease CIDP. Watch the latest episode now, exclusively on RareWellDone.com.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Shiba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Shiba.com.